First of all, in the studio, we have some former teachers, and I'd just like to say good day.
Hello.
Thank you. Hello.
And could we have your names and the positions you have and the positions you had back then when you were in Nain?
Well, when both John and I were in Nain in 1965, we were here from 1965 to 1966. I was the principal of Nain School. It had six classrooms, and I was a teacher of, as well as principal of grade 6, 7, 8, and 9. And John was teaching grade 4 and 5. Mary Sillett was teaching. Kate Hetash was here as well. We had two teachers from Newfoundland. And then, of course, we both left after our year. John went away and did his thing, and I went away and did my thing. I became a lawyer. We decided that we'd like to come back and visit the community that we like so much. So 52 years later, here we are.
After 53 years, do you say?
Yes.
Okay.
So in my classroom, I had students Rosina Callio, Jesse Lyle, Henry Lyle, Susie Hainach, Ernestine Yarasi, Elizabeth Winters, Jim Anderson, Sarah Webb, Herman Webb, Joe Dicker, Donald Dicker, and Gordon Obed. So we've bumped into some of them so far, and I'd like to have the opportunity of meeting others. So this Thursday in the government building at 7:30, we're going to have some pictures shown and some old film and some tape recordings that we have. So who'd ever like to come, they're welcome to come.
And John?
Well, my name is John Penny. I was here with Jerome in 1965, 66. We arrived together on a plane, on floats on the water, because, of course, there was no airport at that time. We both stayed for most of the 1 year, and we both left together on the Bonavista, the boat that took us down to Goose Bay. And as Jerome said, we for us both, this was a very special year that we spent here. And I've told people about Nain everywhere I've been ever since. And I've always thought it would be very interesting to come back to see how it is today. And that's what we've done. And as Jerome said, meeting, I was the teacher for grades 4 and 5, two grades in the same class. I have the names of the students, but I can't reel them off as well as Jerome just has done. But we were both relatively inexperienced as teachers, but we did our best, and we certainly enjoyed the year that we were here immensely. I was also involved in the scout group that existed at the time, together with the Mountie. And we also had a youth club on Saturday night called the Northern Lights Club, where there would be square dancing and, well, a lot of dancing to Beatles music and other pop music that was popular at the time. So, as Jerome said, we're enjoying meeting some of the people we remember and seeing how Nain has changed.
Where are you originally from?
I'm originally from the north of England, from Yorkshire, from Leeds, actually quite close to Fullneck School, which is the Moravian school in England, which you find mentioned even here. I've seen mention of it, and it was considered to be a very good school when I was young in Leeds. But I came as a volunteer here with Voluntary Service Overseas, which was an English initiative to send young people abroad around the world to work in countries where there was a need for people to go and teach or to work in hospitals and so on. And VSO, Voluntary Service Overseas, sent people here for some 12 years, I think. There were people here, several before me, who came. And there were several, a lot of people who came in the years after I left. And I know that Jim Lyle, for instance, has even married one of the women who came here. So VSO has certainly left its mark.
And Mr. Bogart, where are you originally from?
I'm originally from Toronto, Ontario. Now live in Hamilton. And my wife is here with me. She always wanted to see Nain because I talked a lot about Nain and about the people from Nain. John's wife, unfortunately, doesn't like the cold. So he tried to get her to come, but I think she's a little afraid of how cold it might be. But I warned my wife, I don't think it's going to be that bad. It's the middle of June. But yesterday it was snowing, right? So it's cold outside, but the people here are warm. And that's what counts.
Yeah, we have a very chilly spring here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it has been like all spring.
Mm.
I guess going back to those years back in 65 and 66, what were the main subjects taught at that time?
Well, I think the curriculum was the same thing for all of Newfoundland and Labrador. As you know, the education system back then was controlled by various churches. So each church in each community kind of had their own superintendent. Back then it was Reverend Peacock, who was a Moravian kind of superintendent who looked after the education system along the coast. It wasn't a secular system. It was, although we didn't teach any religion in school. We didn't do that. We're not Moravians. And I was hired by Reverend Peacock and really over the phone. And I spoke to him, and they were looking for somebody. And I had just graduated from university, and so I wanted to teach, and he asked me to be principal of the school, which I was delighted to do. So I taught all in one classroom, as John had done with his, 6 to 9. I had two students in grade 9, Henry Lyle and Susie Hainoch. And so I taught them the curriculum to get them ready for high school. I taught them French, for example, and some French to the rest of the class as well. Otherwise, mathematics, geography, history, all the kind of regular subjects that kids would learn. And all of the kids were fluent in Inuktitut. And I mean, certainly with the kindergarten kids, some of them didn't speak English at all. And I understand that's changed a bit now.
Do you want to talk about some experience you came across during that year?
The year was absolutely full of amazing experiences for me. I mean, I just one or two first impressions. When I remember, I was thinking about the classroom when I first arrived. I was quite shocked in a way to see that on each wall of the classroom was a picture of a member of the British royal family, which I found, amazing, really. Coming from England, because a lot of people are not very royalist there, and here I didn't really understand that. Well, I knew something of Newfoundland's history, but I was quite surprised to see a picture of the Queen on one wall and Prince Charles on another, and which I immediately changed that, I have to say. I took them down fairly quickly because I didn't think it was entirely up to date to be displaying their photos like that. But there were a lot of very vivid experiences we had here. I mean, it was an amazing place to be for a year, a very special place. The climate, of course, was very different from what I'd known in England. The sea freezing sometime before Christmas, and then not, even in June, you've still got sea ice. That's quite extraordinary, really. And I like the cold. And actually, when I was interviewed as by voluntary service overseas in London to come here, I had been in the Scouts and I'd been walking in the north of England in the snow and ice at that time. And I talked a little bit about that. And I think that's why they thought, oh, Labrador will be the right place for him. The year was absolutely full of amazing experiences. We did wonderful hunting trips with people like Dorman Webb and his brother Henry, Wilfrid Ford and George Dicker, who took us out, I remember, in a boat the first few weeks we were here, fishing, jigging. When we, I think there were six of us who went out jigging for cod. And we caught enough cod in that afternoon to feed everybody in the mission house for the whole winter. I mean, it was an absolutely extraordinary experience.
And Mr. Bogart, what experience you came across in that one year?
Like John, we had terrific experiences, particularly hunting and fishing and going sealing out on the ice. Both of us had parkas made with silipats, and I'm wearing one now, which was made by Jim Lyle's mother, which I am going to donate to the museum, which I understand is going to be opening here. So I'm really warm, and thanks to her, really. So just all of these special people and the trips we took as well, which maybe we'll talk about on Thursday night. We had some very scary experiences where I think we almost died, where we got caught in these huge waves. We were out in a boat, and the waves are maybe 40, 50 feet high over the boat, and we never thought we might even come out of that. This we're was very lucky.
A tide rip, I think.
Well, we were
that.
In a tickle. Yeah. There was a tickle out there, which you're probably familiar with. The waves were coming way over above the boat, and Tiller, Sam Tiller, who was driving the boat, was able to get us back to shore, very luckily. We were out there with Tony Williamson, who was a PhD student from Memorial University, who had come up on the coast to study. And there were other people who dropped by here, who the older folks might remember, the Wheelers, who were archaeologists and anthropologists from the United States, from Cornell University at Ithaca. And they would come up here every summer. They would, on their own, in a canoe, take their tent and all of their equipment and paddle up the coast and sort of hang out and live off the land and tent out and then paddle back down in the fall and then stay in Nain for a bit and then go out. Tony was doing studies about the seals along the coast. He wanted to know how, during the many, many years ago, whether the patterns of the harp seal had changed and how many there were. So he asked me if I would look at the old missionary logbooks, which they would record how many seals were shot on a particular day. And so there'd be an entry, January 1st, so-and-so went out, shot four harp seals and a flipper seal and brought it back. And so they wanted all that recorded to see whether the numbers had changed and the kinds of seals had changed. So there's a lot to do up here, both teaching school and doing that sort of thing. But, it's the people really that count and the people that we met and the people that we meet right now and their children and their grandchildren. Some of our students, of course, unfortunately, are no longer with us, but their children are, their grandchildren are. It's been quite amazing to meet them.
It has changed a lot. So you came on a float plane when you first arrived. So how did it feel coming in the other day when you did on a bigger plane?
Well, I don't think it's the size of the plane that mattered so much. It's just the feeling, traveling over the land and looking down onto the Labrador coast. I had a similar feeling to when we first came up here. Of course, we didn't know what to expect. But this time, we're very excited about waiting to reach Nain and being able to see Nain from the air and look down at Nain. Of course, then land on a landing strip. But it was a very emotional feeling to see the village still here. Changed though it is, but nevertheless.
I know
something.
It has changed a lot since you were here.
Yeah.
And what did you think of it when you come inside from on the plane when you saw Nain, the community?
It looked huge. When we were here, there were 600 people. Now I understand it's more than double that population. When we were here, there were 1,000 dogs. And I don't know how many dogs there are now, but there were a lot of dog teams back then. There were only 6 skidoos when we were here. Now we look around and we see, it looks like everybody has one skidoo at least, an ATV, there are cars, there are drivable roads here, there are stop signs here. There were no stop signs. There was, the lower path and there was the middle path. And in fact, I was just showing John this morning a sketch of Nain back then with all the houses and the names of the people who lived in each of those houses. And so if you're going to come out on Thursday night, I'd be glad to show you that. I'm going to leave that here as well. You can see all the owners of the original homes, which I'm sure is hugely changed, like across the brook. There are all kinds of homes there. There wasn't anything over there.
No.
And, of course, the water source was back behind Nain Hill. Now the water source, I don't know where it is, somewhere out down towards Trouser Lake, I'm not sure. And there was a power station, and the power would go out from time to time. At night you'd be reading, and then suddenly power's gone, right? Sam Anderson there, met Bill Medcalf, would have to go run down and fix it, see what he could do about it. So there wasn't a permanent, constant availability of power. And we had Coleman lamps in our rooms. So lots of changes.
Was the power
diesel
generally on 24/7? Or was there certain times when it would be off?
As far as I remember, it was on
24/7. As far as I remember, it was on all the time.
Yeah.
There were power cuts sometimes when there was a problem in the power station. They had diesel generators, as far as I remember. I have a photograph of the power station. And Bill Metcalf, who was in charge of making sure the power station was operating okay, did a good job. I mean, most of the time we had electricity. You know, it wasn't, that was actually something that worked pretty well.
Have you seen other advancements that, say, didn't exist or have improved greatly since you were here?
Oh, yes. I mean, the changes here are enormous. I mean, first of all, the airstrip. I mean, landing on an airstrip was not possible when we came. The housing has obviously improved hugely. I'm not quite sure whether they have a mains drainage system here. I assume they do. There was certainly no mains drainage system when we were here. And there was a telephone system, but to telephone outside, you had to use a radio telephone. So you talked, and then you said over, and then the other person could talk. That was a new experience for me, which I remember. But that's all changed, obviously. And there was no internet or other regular. I mean, I remember having an old radio in my room, which could receive the Voice of America and a bit of Radio Moscow or something like that. But that was about all we had from the outside world. I spoke to my father in England, I think, once during the year. But otherwise, it was a very remote, isolated place, which had none, really, of the modern facilities that you see today.
And, of course, when you spoke by radio telephone, everybody in the community could hear your conversation. So it wasn't a private conversation that you were having with your parent, whoever else you were speaking with. And the mail delivery was a big thing. When the mail came in, everybody ran down, you know, to the wharf, and, you know, the plane would land on the ice, and everybody ran, and then Sam Anderson would attach the mail bags to his skidoo, take it up to the White's house. She was the postmaster, I guess you would call her, and you'd wait to see whether you got any mail. And that was a big thing. And at Christmas time, there was a Christmas drop by parachute, where gifts would be parachuted in, brought in from Goose Bay. So there was no regular, real good communication where there obviously is now. I mean, to have a radio station here, or a television station, was unthinkable back then.
When we were here, I spent a lot of time taking photographs, and I have 450 photographs, which were slides I took, and I've converted them to digital photographs now, which, we, as Jerome said at the beginning, we're going to be showing today, 7:30 p.m. I also made a few recordings, and I wondered whether you'd like to hear one of them now, of some singing in the church.
It's in English.
That was Juliana Hay and Margaret Dicker and Mary Sillett singing in 1966.
Since you arrived, you've met some of the students you taught already?
Yes. Oh, sure, I met Gordon Obed, taught him. The first person I actually met was Rosina Callio. She was in the restaurant at the lodge. I met her, and I met her grandson, Jeremy. And also met a lot of other students that I didn't teach, but we knew. John Townley we just saw last night. And we're getting around, and seem we bump into somebody, we ask them what their last name is, and we find out they're obviously in some way related to the kids that we taught and that we knew. And we're very sad to hear about some of the losses of the young children who grew up into adult years but unfortunately passed away. That's very hard to accept, but that's part of life, obviously. We're very close with various people. some people we haven't seen that we're anxious to see. Paulus Harris, we met his son last night, but we haven't seen Paulus, so we'd like to see him and many other people.
Including Dorman Webb, I'd like to meet. I mean, we're sorry Dorman's not here.
They're not here. Dorman and Herman Webb, I think, are out of the community right now.
And would you like to add anything else?
Just to say a thank you, really, for what for us was, I think we probably took more than we gave, in a way, because we gained so much from the year that we were here. And we appreciated the experience so much. And it was really a life-changing experience for us coming here. We did our best to do what we'd been sent to do. And we think we did. We did not a bad job. But we certainly gained a great deal from the year we were here. And we gained it because of the people here and because of their kindness and the welcome that we had then, which we've experienced in the last day that we've been here. Still, people are very friendly and open, and we're really enjoying ourselves here.
I think all of those impressions have stuck in our mind. And my children, we have three daughters, and all of them know, and all of them can count to five in Inuktitut, you know, because they hear their father doing that. And the songs that still are in my mind from Nain, they know. So, you know, I will be someday just suddenly I'm out in the garden or I'm doing something, and a song from Nain will come into my head. It just stuck so firmly. And I guess because of my age at the time, and we were probably both impressionable, that it left a strong impression with us. And I think it always will be. In fact, our daughter encouraged us to come. Said, why don't, you know, I turned 75 last October. And our daughter said, well, what, Dad, why don't you go to Nain? And she got in touch with John, who's living in France now. I didn't know all of this was happening. And then John contacted me, and we said, yeah, let's go. Why not? So we're glad we did.
And do you have any plans on, like, with the photos and slides you mentioned about what to do with them? Or?
Well, I digitized them about 10 years ago when I was in Kazakhstan for 4 years, and I had a lot of time to spend because each photograph took me about 10 minutes to transform from a slide to a digital photograph. And I put them I made copies on CDs. I have a few copies here which I can give to people who may be able to make use of them. But they've also been put on the internet. Someone in England who I gave a copy of the pictures to has actually produced books from the pictures, and they are for sale on Amazon. You can see a lot of the pictures on the internet. Some of the people I've met in the village have already somehow tracked down one or two pictures of their relatives, which were ones I took back then. So this evening we're going to be showing, I have the pictures on my tablet, I have them on a USB, on a CD, and I have paper copies also. So I'm intending to show those. People like Them Days in Goose Bay have also used them. I also had I've had several contacts from Canadian Broadcasting Company who contacted me a few years ago and asked me if they could use some of them, which they did on some program about the north of Canada. And yeah, I mean, I'm very open to using them in any way that is helpful to people here. So
have you had any discussions with the Nunatsiavut government about getting them in archives or in Illusawak or anything like that?
I have met the gentleman here yesterday who is involved in the archiving of material, and I'm going to make sure he gets a copy of them all before I leave.
Jamie Brake?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm going to give him a copy of them all. But, I've had quite a lot of interesting contacts because of the way they have been diffused on the internet. I had someone who you may know, Sabina Flowers, contact me. She married a German guy from Goose Bay and then went to live in Germany. She saw some of my pictures and contacted me when I was living in Brussels. And I've never met her, but we've exchanged a lot of emails, and she sent me pictures. And occasionally we still communicate. But, through the diffusion of the pictures I took, I have actually made quite a lot of interesting contacts with people.
Sabina's living out BC.
She's living in BC now, is she? Right, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I knew she'd moved, but I wasn't quite sure where she was at the moment.
Unless otherwise you'd like to add anything else, I'd certainly like to thank you for dropping by in our Ohalahati studio today.
Nakumik, thank you, and look forward to meeting people on Thursday.
And John, and what is Maureen? Yeah.
Thank you very much indeed. We are enjoying ourselves a great deal, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Nakumik.